You know, I'm not really a conspiratorial type of person. When I'm looking into a mystery, I tend to look for an answer that satisfies common sense. You know, it just makes sense to me. And it requires, the fewest assumptions, kinds of Occam's razor type of thing, right? And usually that leads me in a good direction, man. I mean, usually I feel like I can at least, maybe I'm looking somewhere anyway, and it makes kind of sense. But sometimes, as the kids would say, it just all seems kind of sus. And a great example of that is the Paracas skulls from Peru. When I dug into that looking to find an answer, what I found read like a mashup of freaking Sherlock Holmes and the X-Files. It's insane. I could go off about it for 5 minutes trying to make the perfect intro, but let's just talk about the things because the history of this is insanity. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dunking. First discovered by Europeans in the 1800s, the Paracas Necropolis is located in Peru. In the 1920s, the Warikaran Necropolis was discovered, and in it was found hundreds of funeral bundles, layered bags of grave goods, one inside the other, and in the center bag, the body of the deceased and the grave goods proper. There were other grave bundles like this in the vicinity, but the ones from Warikaran became famous because of the shape of the skulls. The largest has a cranial capacity of 1,655 cubic centimeters and is 28 centimeters long. For comparison, the average male cranial capacity is 1,380 cubic centimeters, over 10% smaller, and 17.5 centimeters long. The size and shape isn't the only odd thing about these skulls. They often lack suture marks where other skulls have them. In particular, the sagittal suture comes up missing from the more extreme specimens. Many of these skulls had evidence of cranial truncation. That means they had holes drilled in their damned head while they were still alive. And a lot of these skulls have red hair on them, and they come in all different kinds of shapes and sizes. In other words, they're speculated on pretty heavily because of a number of different reasons. And the speculation, it runs a fucking gambit, man. I mean, we're talking about, is it ancient aliens? Is it freaking extinct species of hominid? Is it a genetic deformity from inbreeding or some such stuff? Where did this come from? Is it just basically people stretching out skulls, but they got really, 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 really good at it down here? There's all kinds of speculation. So when I dug into it, I was hoping to find some semblance of an answer. Instead, what I found was, let's just talk about that. In 1927, the first of the graves in the Paracas Necropolis was discovered by archaeologists. Immediately afterwards, Julio Tello, the archaeologist who had ordered the original expedition, went to work on the site, and it encompassed not only his professional life, but archaeology in Peru itself from that moment on. One of the things that happened immediately is these odd little discrepancies that seem to imply foul play of some sort. The first time he mentions the total number of grave bundles, for example, Tello says there was 429. But when he first spoke of the find in public, he spoke of 451 bundles. And in 1933, when he wrote about the government not properly financing the preservation of the mummies, he spoke again of 451 bundles. Another archaeologist agreed, and in mutually authored papers, they speak again of 451 bundles. The excuse, or reason, or whatever you want to call it, that's given for this is that the bodies found in nearby caves were given numbers 266 through 287. Which is odd. Why would they be included in some counts, including the original, but omitted from others? And why would a site that's off to the side of the main site get numbers assigned that fall right in the middle of the main site? In addition to this, there's contradictory reports of the size of the bundles found. I mean, that's not as important as like missing bundles, but it kind of is, because all of these things allow for a smokescreen. If the reports change from time to time, that is when artifacts can go missing, right? Now, the reason the expedition was sent to look into the region to begin with was the site had been being looted for quite a while. The unique things that had been found at the site drew attention from archaeologists when they showed up on the market, and they asked a looter to help them find the site. And by the time they begin to transport the 429 funerary bundles from the place that they found them to the museum in Lima, well, on the way they had to open up a few because they were like, there were some problems. They're deteriorating. So they just kind of, we just got to pop these bad boys open along the way. And of course, there's not any good records of what they opened up when they did that. There was just, we opened some up along the way, boys. Nothing to see here. Obviously, many of the mummy bundles were already missing, and just as obviously, the things that looked the most promising or that were easiest to take would be long gone by the time the first scientists were on the scene. Now, regardless, the finds were presented to the museum in 1929, and Tella was able to use this to secure funding for the expansion of the museum in order to properly display the finds. At the same time, the new exhibit was scheduled to open, a never-before-opened grain bundle was scheduled to also be opened when the Second South American Congress of Tourism was expecting the exhibit. Now, this was a big moment for Tello. He could secure more funding if this went well, or he could lose a lot of funding. And the bundle contained beans. Not a body. Not a body. When all the dignitaries were there to watch it, beans came out of a funerary bundle. And from what I can find during my research, this is the only one of those bundles that has ever coughed up no body, just beans. So I could be wrong about that. If I am, somebody please let me know down below. I try to read everything I can, but I can't read everything that there is. So I do appreciate assistance. And but I do think that I got this one right. I don't see any other ones that have coughed up beans ever. And that's a little bit on the crazy side now, isn't it? Especially when the funding was such a big deal at this point. It's just a little bit suspect. It's like, we're trying to get funding. Here's some big dignitaries. These items were just taken off of the black market. And, oh, by the way, these items aren't as good as you thought. Some of these are beans, man. It's a grab bag. It's not really funerary bundles, and it could be beans. And finances continued to play a major role in the future of the remains. In 1930, in the wake of the Depression, as well as internal political issues, the Peruvian government was overthrown in a coup. And the new government removed Tello from his position as director of the Museum of Peruvian Archaeology. At this time, several of the grave bundles were in Spain and Germany for exhibits, with a few of the artifacts and remains only being repatriated in recent years, and some things seemingly still missing today, although time and the consistent errors in the records make it difficult to discern this for sure. What we do know is the funding basically vanished to care for these remains, and for the next couple of years they were not adequately protected, displayed, or studied. The scientists involved in their safekeeping spent that time battling red tape and looking for an appropriate place to store the remains and a few bucks to do it with. The remains were moved at least twice during the years of 1929 to 1931, and funding was slashed when the new government had stepped in and was further cut by a third in 1932. This created a sense of desperation in the scientists involved. Despite no longer being in charge of the museum, Tello was still a key researcher of the remains, and in 1936 he took a trip, well, more of a tour, of museums across the Americas with a focus on the United States. His expressed purpose was to, quote, visit museums and to secure technical backing and cooperation. And he managed to do this. In 1936, in New York City, the Andean Research Center was opened. But that's not what got him the funding he needed. That came from Nelson Rockefeller. In 1937, Rockefeller took a trip around South America and stopped in Peru. Now, the mummies weren't being properly protected, in part because the Spanish descendants that ran Peru didn't care about the native remains. And that blew Rockefeller's mind, so he donated $3,000 to the cause of preserving the Huarecayan mummy bundles. Now, this was a fraction of the funding that Tello had requested, but Rockefeller seems to have planned this out, because next it was like, hey, you know, take this money, and then if you accept that, and then you were like, hey, man, we will be willing to give, you know, like four or five of these bundles to the Metropolitan Museum of New York, that Rockefeller happened to be on the board of. He's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I bet I could get the board to donate you enough money to take care of everything if you sent me those mummies my way. And next thing you know, Tello's sending four mummies up there. Now, he claims the criteria was, well, these were the ones that were most in need of preservation. These were the ones that were falling apart. You know, so many of these are falling apart. We had to save those. So those are the ones we sent to Rockefeller. But let's be clear, man. Nelson Rockefeller was not known for just handing out good deals, okay? And in a situation like this where he's clearly negotiating, he's not just like, here's the money you need, see you later. $3,000, $50,000 to that man was not much of nothing in those days. I don't think the criteria was so much which bundles needed restored as much as which ones were the freaking coolest. And it would be nice to know for sure. but the records are pretty crap. So Tello took that $3,000 and immediately used it to start like preserving and cleaning and reconstructing the remains and the artifacts and stuff that they had from these funerary bundles. And they record a handful of the actual details, all of them being textiles. It was 346, I believe it is, textiles that they managed to fix. 346 textiles were preserved, cleaned, and repaired with that money. So he just got through saying, we've got the four funerary bundles that we're going to send to the Metropolitan Museum of New York are falling apart. Oh man, these are in desperate need of repair. We need the Americans to throw some money at it. The Americans give him $3,000. Does he have any funerary bundles that need fixed? No, he's got a whole big pile of cloth. Something about this doesn't add up. It seems to me that these funerary bundles keep getting reported as being in worse condition than they actually are. Otherwise, why wouldn't he spend any of that money on funerary bundles? And if he did, why was not reported and instead we hear about textiles? Doesn't make sense. The fact that Rockefeller had financed these efforts caused the then president of Peru, General Benavides, to take note of the Paracas collection. He is said to have stated, "What is good enough for Rockefeller is good enough for Peru," and offered Tello financing and labor for a new museum. And according to the stories, the president even tried to buy some of those recently preserved textiles. And Tello told him no. And I call bullshit on this. I do not think that is a true account of an actual event. Here's the deal. General Benavides was, well, he was a military dictator, right? You don't tend to remember presidents with the title of general. Usually that tends to imply something bad, but history definitely remembers him as a military dictator. He was not above disappearing people. He was not above underhandedly and somewhat illegally persecuting his political opponents. He's the kind of guy that would not hesitate to have someone disappeared. I don't see an archaeologist that just got some funding for his freaking pet project being like, "I will not sell you one piece of cloth." The Americans, they get four mummies, entire bundles. The president, who's staring me down and could blow my brains out on the museum floor, fuck you, buddy. You don't get one shred of cloth. Okay, this is a bullshit story. I'm not. Sh I We can speculate as to why they came up with this narrative. Is it to discourage people from trying to buy things illegally? Is it to look all great, like Tello is a great revolutionary or something? Who fucking knows? What I do know is there is that story. I would sooner believe that Halo really happened and that Harry Potter is a true story than that. That there's no fucking way. But at any rate, the museum was opened. The collection was reconsolidated from the couple of different locations it was being stored in. And they went back to opening bundles every now and again. They didn't find any beans, but they did see some bones. We know some of them did anyway. Oddly, two of the anthropologists who worked on the project and helped finance it, Samuel K. Lothrop and Marshall Newman, didn't bother to record a single thing regarding their work on the collection. Now, it's strange, isn't it? These guys go to school, then they travel to Peru, and they spend a bunch of money to investigate these enigmas. And then they record nothing. No, they spent money. It's almost like at this point, it seems pretty clear. It's like the experts involved, like they see V-bucks when they look at these skulls. They don't actually like see anything worth documenting. Why would you care? Especially not maybe if you could sell a piece or two of them out of it. Now that's speculative on my part, but again. You've got experts one after the other after the other. How many? I don't know. How many was there? I don't know. What size were there? I don't know. Did we investigate a bunch of them? Yeah. What'd you write about? I don't know. Now, Tello passed in 1947, and Rebecca Carrion Cachot took over the job as director of the National Museum on Anthropology and Archaeology later that year. Now, she'd studied under Tello and was pretty talented at navigating the Peruvian academic political scene, it seems, as one of the earliest things that she did regarding the Paracas skulls was exhibit them in a surgery exhibition, obviously focusing on the truncation seen in many of the specimens. In 1949, she opened the bundle up in the United States. Now, they say this was recorded on film, but I can't find anything about it. And that's not the only thing about this trip that's weird. They say that she packed up this thing, or it was packed up, rather, to be shipped via plane, but then it didn't fit on the plane. And so they sent it via ship, and somebody else traveled with it instead of Rebecca Carrion. And 22 days later, it arrived at its destination. And Junius Bird, who was the anthropologist, was quoted with saying that it lacked a musky smell. And that's a little bit odd. It's a little bit odd that the thing was packaged in a way that wouldn't fit on the plane. It's a little bit odd that they went ahead and just let it, didn't repackage it. Just send it at sea. Fucking 22 days, no big deal. And after 22 days for it to not to have any sort of musky smell, that's really weird. Okay. Now, this bundle had been displayed before, but it had never been opened. So it's got a dead body inside of it, and it's been in a box for 22 days at sea. How the fuck does that thing not smell like death? Doesn't make any sense, man. Now, again, this isn't part of as big of a deal as some of these other things, but when you put it in line as a pattern, it's like, dude, this stuff just, it's just weird, man. It very much to me reeks of so many people being involved, just being like, and I bet you somewhere there's a bunch of these damn skulls and other associated things from that site sitting in some rich dude's basement or some such shit. Like, I've got VHS tapes. Now, in the early days of anthropology, these kind of things were common, but these sort of little mistakes and obvious issues with the site keep popping up. In 1951, something like 18 bundles were illegally looted from the site itself, which of course means we will never know what was in those, and Carrion used opening of bundles to promote Peruvian archaeology over the next few years, and she was very successful, albeit no footage was taken of these openings. Not that it matters, because they won't show you the footage anyway. Now, she made a very interesting statement in 1952 that over 70% of Peruvian artifacts in the world were housed outside of Peru. She said that Berlin alone had almost 50,000 artifacts, and that several other nations held quite a large number of artifacts. Some of these are grave bundles, and almost no record of these exists. Certainly no record of any of them being opened that I could find exists. A lot of these, they just exist on paper. They haven't even been repatriated. Some of them have been, but by and large, the majority of this stuff is just kind of like... Now, before getting married and apparently being forced to step down from position as head of the museum because of that, Carrion donated one more mummy to El Salvador. And this one she was going to open herself, and it's probably to promote the site once more before she stepped down from her position. Now, 160 of those Huarecayan mummies had been damaged, according to reports at this time, due to improper storage still due to a lack of funding. Now, I am of the opinion that when they're spending their funding on textiles and there's entire mummy bundles sitting there getting damaged, I'm of the opinion that they're not really being damaged, that they're being cracked open and sold, all right? This skull's cool. This ring's cool. This thing's cool. Sell, sell, sell. Seal them back up. Oh, man, these don't sell so musky anymore for some reason. I don't know about all that. Now, the bundle that was donated to El Salvador was said to be opened by Carrion herself, and she was also said to have prepared a presentation on that particular bundle. The details of that presentation were apparently presented in the Lima News, but I can find no record of that. I can find no record of the presentation, and neither can most academics. It seems that, once again, the actual work, the actual part of this that would matter, the part that would give us real answers, is gone. How many times is this now? Next to take over the collection was another student of Telos, Toriba Meja Yespi. I'm sure I pronounced that horribly. Meja was not in a position to promote the collection like Carrion had been, and as a result, he was unable to make much headway until he retired from his museum duties and was named Director Emeritus of the National Museum of Anthropology and Archaeology. And then he opened 54 bundles in 1967 and 68. 54! And he recorded six of them. He recorded six of them by number and by a content. The other 48? We don't know anything about. We don't even know which ones they were. Presumably, he just bagged them back up and put them on the shelf. We don't know. We don't know. Once again, now this time it's 48 of them. 48. Let me drive that point home. He opens 54 bundles, 48 of them. He doesn't record even which number bundle it is because they've got them all archived, right? He's not like, oh, it's bundle 228. Nope. I opened the bundle. Oh, these six, we recorded those. Tell me that something didn't get sold there. Tell me that there is not some sort of bullshit going on. And if you really believe that, man, I got a bridge to sell you. Oh, yeah, and by the way, at least two other times, he opened mummy bundles and didn't record what he saw. I opened the bundle, boys. It was a fun day. Now, the records that we have either get better or more secretive since the 80s. It does get harder to find information on the opening of the bundles and the reports of the contents in more recent times. It's clear many of these mummies have not been visible to the public in several decades, with only a handful being accessible to most people. And the records are threadbare, contradictory, and untrustworthy. I mean, we can safely assume that the best stuff was looted a long time ago, is probably in private hands or long lost to the rest of us anyway. I mean, at least 75 bags have either been looted or opened and not recorded at all. And that's not even counting the disparity in numbers in the initial count. I mean, again, this is just, it's a continuous issue, and it just goes all the way through the history of these things. But that's not the whole story of these. I mean, we've got alternate historians as well, right? Guys like Brian Forrester, who have a lot to say about these sort of items. I mean, he believes that he's actually gone on record as saying that he had DNA work done on these skulls and that it came back with, you know, some anomalous stuff. Here, I'll let him say it.
A total of 18 skulls was tested, and results came back from 12. The DNA was so badly degraded after 2,000 to 3,000 years that of the 58 samples of 18 skulls, we got results from 12 of the skulls from two different laboratories, one in Canada, the Lakehead University, and another one at UCLA in California. A third lab was also utilized at Santa Cruz, University of California, but they stated that of the, I think, 18 samples they were given, no results were forthcoming. We're not sure if that's true or whether the results were so bizarre that they decided to hide them.
But there's no links to the data, no proof that any of this actually happened. I mean, look, it is nothing. And that, look, man, that's no better than the archaeologists not recording their stuff either. Don't tell me something. Show me the receipts, buddy. This is how we, like, advance scientifically. This is how we, like, prove we learn things. Because let's be clear, a lot of people will lie for a lot of reasons. Some people to line their pockets. Some people for prestige. Some people for shits and giggles, man. So it's important to be able to fact check somebody's claims, especially on something contentious like this. So, you know, here's the deal, man. That whole, you know, I have the data, but you don't know her. She lives in Canada, so you haven't met her kind of crap is never, ever, ever going to fly with me. I'm sorry. You're always going to have to bring receipts, or unless what you're telling me is something basic, like paint dries, I'm probably going to be a little skeptical. Sorry. And to truly drive home the issue I have with the data in this arena, in 2022, a paper was published that did a genetic analysis of the hair of one of the mummies in order to determine its genetic origins. The conclusions were presented interestingly. It seemed like a debunking paper to me. It goes out of its way to explain red hair, and it doesn't mention the fact that some of the loci included in the findings are usually considered to be from the old world. But what's most hilarious about this to me is the skull that they used for analysis. Take a look. Does that look enigmatic to you? Does that look like the kind of skull that somebody's going to say, man, I wonder if that's an ancient alien or not? Or if it's going to be one that even Brian Forrester would say, yeah, that's just cranial deformation, man. Mom and Dad smacked that kid's head with the board when he was little. I think it's pretty obvious that he's not testing the skull in this paper that needs, like, that's going to debunk anything, all right? But the paper is clearly set out to debunk those kinds of things. So it's, even today, we got a little bit of smoke and mirrors. And what kind of fucking science paper tests one skull? I mean, since when is that any sort of evidence? You can't get five or six. I mean, they're fucking like 400 and some odd some arbitrary number of bundles exists. Can't you at least find two to test or five or ten? For fuck's sake, man. Come on. At least give me seven of the damn things. This is science. You can replicability, man. Give me some multiple test samples. Fuck. Pathetic. You know, some scientists believe that three different cultures were using that necropolis when it was first founded. So if that's the case, you're going to need to use the ones with the really big, weird, goofy skulls to even get the right culture. But at any rate, if you're trying to debunk claims, you're definitely going to need to use the ones that you got some serious top knot going on, not just a little bit of smushage. But the problem here is that we have a bunch of unverified shit going on all across the board here, right? We have the pseudo guys and the real scientists all giving us, trust me, brah. And, dude, that is, well, that's extremely problematic. And that causes some issues that we see right now in the modern day. Like, look at the alien mummies from Peru that we see right now that a lot of people say, you know, look like cake or whatever. And a lot of people are true believers in. And then, you know, I look at it and I'm like, you know, it looks sketch. I'll be honest. It does look a little paper mache at the same time. People that have put their hands on it have said that, you know, they would like to see more work done. So I would like to see some work done. I would love to see more work done. But here's the environment. We have, you know, everything's, it's all smoke and mirrors. You can't even, I don't even know who to trust when I watch people talk about having handled those things. And as if that's not bad enough, this continues on in other aspects. There are small YouTube channels even popping up that have these kinds of videos that are like the artifacts being unearthed that are uncannily looking like, you know, Nephilim or aliens or Anunnaki or the hell. And quite often, I mean, there's no links. Same thing. That's really what it comes down to. It's just look, trust me, bro. See what I found here? And that's not going to get us anywhere. That's not going to do any good. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised at all if down in Peru and Bolivia and shit right now is just kind of open season on it. If you find something in your backyard, you go crazy digging and you don't call nobody. Because by the time you do, they're going to steal all your shit. And it's all about money for a lot of these people. And it's just, it's a big old mess. Okay. And at the end of the day, I don't really know who to trust. I usually like to say at the end of one of my videos, you know, guys, here's the thing. I can't tell you for sure, but here's the direction I'm leaning. You want to know the direction I'm leaning right now? The direction I'm leaning right now is the most mysterious shit that came from that site will probably never be in public hands again. And that's sad because there is some enigmatic stuff there. It is weird. Those skulls are goofy. And we're not going to get any good data from them, it seems. And the data that we get from the pseudo-archaeologists and whatnot is just as threadbare. We're not getting any data. We're getting the assertion that there is data. We've had them tested, boys, and this is what it said. Show me the fucking tests. And that's where I keep finding a brick wall. I do not find anything verifiable. And I know that the best stuff is certainly, or almost certainly, long gone. So with the combination of both of those things, do you know what I have to say about those skulls? They are very mysterious. And I'm certain that something's weird about them. I'm almost positive that something caused people to snap the fuck out of those things when they were first available on the market. And people kept kicking the can to try to keep them available on the market as long as possible. And kept buying shit from those bundles long after history would like to let you think that they did. And because of that, I don't know what to think about them. That sucks. But They're mysterious, so I hope you enjoyed the video. I hope I helped clarify your position on these things. So now that you've, if you were certain that you knew what they were, you can either say Dan's an idiot because I feel he is, or I'm less certain about things, or maybe Dan's an idiot because you know I am. I mean, my ex seems to think that. Anyway, I want to thank you all so much for showing up here and watching me babble about something else that I apparently know nothing about. Fuck. That's a great advertisement for a video. But seriously, I wish I knew more about these. But thanks a lot. I do appreciate it so much. I'm going to be speaking at the Cosmic Summit this summer. Make sure and get your tickets down below. It should be a pretty fun little event. I've got a poll going on Twitter right now that is going to end on Monday, so like the day after this video goes live. And it's basically to vote for the worst archaeologist of 2024, the one who did the most damage to the field. You can just go there. It's not even a poll. It's just like you go and you just comment on it, and it'll be a lot of fun. You should contribute to that. I have a Patreon and a Ko-Fi and channel memberships. And I don't know. Thank you so much for watching. Click the buttons, then the bells, and you guys have a great evening, and I hope to see you next time.